Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read. As I read it, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And we're going to be talking about a book which was nominated for, but did not win, a major science fiction award.
Oh,
you know about this. We were talking about it before. It's the Arthur C. Clarke Award, books which were published in the UK in the last year, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I was saying, hey, a pretty good run at these books so far, because one of them was Luminous by Sylvia Park, gave that 5 stars.
Yes.
Another one was When There Are Wolves Again. We gave that...
Highly rated.
There is no anti-mimetics division, which I didn't rate that highly, but I was like, I can understand why this book is fun and interesting. And then I mentioned this one, Dungeon Crawler Carl, which is just like the There Is No Anti-Mimetics Division, was a self-published book previously, but then it was professionally published by a publisher last year or the year before, whatever.
Yeah.
So it became eligible and was there, and I was like, that's probably going to be the next book.
Yes.
So we went on holiday. Well, we were driving down to the European Juggling Convention. I was performing at the gala show. We go every year. And I had this book and I thought, hey, we've got like an 11 hours sitting in the car.
Long ride.
To drive from Berlin, Germany down to Slovenia. And I had this book and I was like, oh, I'll just put it on. I don't know much about it. I kind of know that it's meant to be sort of like it's something called Lit RPG. Literary role-playing game, with the idea being that's a literary genre combining the conventions of computer role-playing games with science fiction and fantasy novels. So it's like a new descriptor of a new form of fiction popularized in Japan. That's what it says here. But then it kind of like this is like the main example or most popular example at the moment. It was something. It was going to be something computer game, like progression, numbers go up, character gets stronger, but in a novelized form. And I didn't really know much about it. And then I put it on as we were driving down to Slovenia.
Yeah.
And you and I listened to maybe like the first 3 hours, I guess. It was a bit, quite a chunk. Yeah, maybe the first quarter of the book together.
Yes.
And so this is a novel that Juliana started, but she didn't give up on it because, you know, it wasn't good enough or whatever.
No.
It's just that it was just something that we were listening to. And then as I got into it, I was like, well, if I ever want to finish this, I've just got to listen to it myself as an audiobook. I can't wait until me and Juliana can listen to it together.
Yes. So we didn't listen to it on the way back.
No, we were just listening to music and
we had a different route back, so it wasn't quite continuous 11 hours. So
We broke the drive up into different chunks and things like that. So what we have is a book which is about a computer game, but not a computer game, but it's kind of a computer game, but it's not a computer game. And it's not like a Dungeons and Dragons game, but it is kind of Dungeons and Dragons, but not really. But everything happens inside a dungeon, but it's not really a dungeon. It's like a fake dungeon, which is constructed to be a computer game-esque kind of thing by an all-powerful alien race, but not that alien race, a different alien race. But it's done for as a Running Man style, Hunger Games kind of most dangerous game style of thing where people are together and they're gonna die one by one until at the end, you know, just the hero remains or whatever.
Yes, and the area shrinks.
Yeah, and the area it gets smaller. So there's a bit of battle royale computer game stuff going in there with sort of like an extraction shooter kind of game as well. So you're in a zone and you've got a certain amount of time until you've got to get you and all your loot out of that zone to the next zone.
Yeah.
So it's a bit, Escape from Tarkov. It's a bit PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, all of those kind of things, influences put together into this one idea. And our main character is Carl.
Yeah.
And he was in the... I know this is weird to say, but as this book goes on, the politics of this book are all over the place.
Uh-huh.
But it definitely feels like this guy, what's his name? Is it Matt Dinnerman? Yeah, Matt Dinnerman, the publisher, he's kind of like this American guy who sort of like got thumbs up politics, if you know what I mean. But okay. it's all surface thumbs up politics.
Yeah.
So when later on something about sex, he's sort of like, oh, I'm not gay. I mean, I'm not gay. I mean, nothing wrong with being gay, but I'm not gay, but whatever. You know, it's that kind of signaling of correct politics. Some of the main bad guys, as you find out later on, it's sort of like, oh, who are these bad guys? Oh, they're just, we can't just have a person being bad. There has to be a signal that they're bad and that it's okay for me to go up against them. They're going to be a nemesis. And they're like, oh yeah, they're just ICE officers. What's it? Immigration, customs, oh. enforcement, things like that.
Really?
Yeah, they're just like, yeah, they were mentioned a few times, like, who are these bad people who are killing other dungeon crawlers?
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, oh yeah, they were ICE officers who were surrounding a home with...
Right. And they're brainwashed because then their brains
No, it's just, it's an easy, it's just an easy target to say, how do I signal somebody who it's okay yeah. that they're going to be a nemesis or a bad guy in this novel? Like, what is it going to be about them that yeah. you're going to have to, like, what's a label that you can put? One of the examples I have, there was the TV show called Ozark. And yeah. in the opening scene of Ozark, one of, like, just this minor character who's only in this one scene turns up and he says, oh yeah, I live in Trump Tower now, you know, in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I live in Trump Tower. And I, like, paused the TV show and said to you, he is going to die and it's going to be okay. It's the TV show is signaling that it's okay for us to think that it's okay for him to die. Like, we should be okay with him dying.
Mm.
And but it's okay because he's happy to live in Trump Tower. That's a political signal to us. That it's okay for us to feel like it's okay for him to die. To die.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know
the,
what I mean?
The definition of good and bad becoming more and more fuzzy and difficult.
And so our main character, Carl, he needs to have some kind of military background, but being in the military isn't good. Like, he can't be police, he can't be military. So yeah. he's a Coast Guard. So he was on Coast Guard ships for a while. And you're like, oh, yeah. that's very convenient that he can have yes. like the military discipline and the whatever he needs.
Training.
To,
yeah. He might be a fit person.
And but he's Coast Guard. So he's one of the good ones. Mm. He's Coast Guard. And you're like, oh, right. One of the good ones. And so the political messaging or the political like statements in this book are all like, no, don't worry, Carl, he's one of the good ones. Like, he's going to help the elderly people and he's going to be against the ICE people.
Okay.
So it's just one of those funny things that I mentioned. So
interesting.
The setup of this novel is he is looking after his girlfriend's cat while his girlfriend is having an affair with somebody else on some island somewhere.
They split up, didn't they?
The start of the book is him dumping his girlfriend because he saw some pictures of her maybe having an affair or whatever. Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
But he has to look after her prize cat
yeah.
That she displays at cat shows and wins prizes at cat
mm-hmm.
shows. Princess Donut is the name.
Yes.
And so that happens. And then there's an alien invasion, something, something. Everything on Earth is destroyed unless you're outside with no roof above your head, you survive and everything. It's just, it's what it is. It's sort of like quite a long setup just to get to the point where, say, look, everybody has to go underground. And because they're underground, they're in dungeons. Okay, anything underground is a dungeon.
Yeah.
These underground dungeons are 100% generic underground spaces.
Yeah.
None of them are described in any detail at all. It's sort of like, yes, and they went down a passageway. And I was like, what kind of... Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's just... Like, it might as well be like a computer game level with default wall textures, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, like
yeah.
you know, there's grey boxes yeah, with the lines going down so you can measure up.
You select the pixels.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, it's just sort of like, whatever. It's like... Yeah, it might as well just be a Minecraft world. Okay, this is just an area, thing,
you,
or whatever.
You, reader, imagine... A tunnel.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what it is. And so what's set up is some computer game version, but they're not in a computer game, but the level of technology that the aliens have is so advanced that it might as well be magic, which is good because they're all using magic.
Yeah.
But they're not actually in a computer game, but they're now in a world which is indistinguishable from a computer game to the point where they can be teleported around. They have like menu systems that come up like in their heads or whatever.
Yeah.
They can type messages to each other in their heads. They have an inventory system, but it's never really clear, like, are they now just in a computer game? Is they just in the Matrix, and if they die in the Matrix they die? Because they literally have this in like a system where you can loot stuff and it just goes into something, I don't know, bag of holding, whatever. And
like in a computer game.
Everything is exactly like in a computer game.
Yeah.
But it's not a computer game, it's real life. But the computer game is set, like the real life game that they're in, yeah, is set up to be indistinguishable in every way from a, like, Zelda or whatever JRPG or whatever you're gonna do, like where, yeah, you're gonna level things up, you're gonna get more hearts, you're gonna get stronger, you're gonna get more equipment, everything like that.
Yeah.
And then the story continues with Carl and Princess Donut killing monsters, saving other humans who are down there if they need saving.
Yeah.
And, you know, slowly getting to know what the system is for or how it goes or whatever.
Okay, well, I finished listening to this bit,
yeah,
and in my head it reminded me very much of our few podcast episodes where we played some role-playing games, and you know, yeah, I poked the tree.
Don't poke the tree. Don't poke the mysterious tree, which is mysteriously in the middle of the road rather than the side of the road.
And so that really was like somebody wrote down what we said in the podcast.
Well, let's get onto that because there's a few things I want to say about this. I'm just saying, though, that the setup is interestingly very much the same as a few previous books. Like, yeah, literally the last now four books that are reviewed have all been first novels by authors.
Mm.
War of the Worlds. There, yeah, is no anti-mimetics division.
Yeah.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and now this one. And yes, as this book started, I said, this, you know, when we were arriving in the car, at some point I mentioned, this is very Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, because I, yeah, just finished, or I was currently reading that as an ebook. I can't remember, but very fresh in my mind. Yes. Literally the last episode that we did here.
Yes, that's true. And when we started listening to yeah, the rock crawler, I thought, wow,
a rock crawler is a kind of car that drives.
Yes,
over
I know.
It's like a remote control car.
The not the themes, but the way things are looked at. Like how a main character talks about something. It reminded me a lot about this really dry, cynical way of...
Well, it's a different kind of cynical.
Yes,
it's a
but
different
it's kind of, there,
but
right?
What it does have in common, in the first chapter of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy... Mm-hmm. The entire world is destroyed. Almost everyone on Earth, except for a few characters, are destroyed.
Yeah.
And then the adventure begins. And this book does a similar thing,
yeah,
where pretty much everyone except for 2 million people on Earth are killed. And then in the aftermath of that, we have a comedy adventure.
Yes.
And that is the same kind of setup. And you're like, ah, okay. So we're working in that realm where we're going to have a comedy adventure.
Yeah, with weird characters turning up.
In the aftermath of everybody on Earth dying.
Yeah.
And it's... And I like the challenge. In this case, I think it's an admirable challenge,
yeah,
to have somebody go, right, everyone on Earth died. But it then feels, again, so artificial that I would almost be more impressed if everybody on Earth hadn't died. You know what I mean? But everybody who had been outside was just scooped off the Earth and put into a dungeon.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to have everybody on Earth is dead. Because it's like Matt Dinnerman, unfortunately, isn't a good enough writer to write characters who can be emotionally impacted by, like, literally almost anything, except in a comedy way,
yeah,
except in a funny way.
Yeah.
Which is, again, there is lip service paid by the author and some of the main characters that they're kind of sad that everybody on Earth has died and that millions more people... It's like it's written... You know what I mean by, like, the show don't tell? He is just telling us that our main character is kind of upset at some points.
Okay.
But then every single thing that they do is like comedy and fun adventure.
Yes.
And
even at the start, it doesn't just like, it doesn't like, first of all, when I listened to it, I didn't really like our main character.
Nope.
But there were enough comedic elements in it,
yeah,
that you as a listener always had something lighthearted,
yeah,
at the same time.
Yeah.
So it was always like trying to
And here's the thing. I agree yeah. with you that at the start, there is a fun balance of the world ending yeah. and someone being thrust into an unusual situation,
yeah.
them not quite knowing what's going on. And, like I say, all of the world building of what is actually going on and why is everything working this way.
Yeah.
And so for the first quarter to a third of this novel, which again, you listen to a lot of that chunk.
Yeah.
I thought this book was mildly amusing and fine, if yeah. you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But it never got more like beyond mildly amusing and fine.
Yeah.
I like some of the cultural references. I like some of the fun moments. I like, you know, explaining some of the internet references.
Yes.
You know, there's this, you know, and I've done this to you many times when you'll say, what is it? What's the goat thing about in the Christmas Islands? Or, you know, whatever that came yeah. up in the thing. And I was like, I'm not going to explain goatsy to you. Don't Google it. But yes. I might. Oh, then I did explain. Either yeah. way, you know, Matt Dinnerman and me have obviously got not the same kind of background, but I recognize the internet references that he would put in here and some of the other cultural references he put yes. in there, which was enough to keep me, again, mildly amused.
Yeah, that's kind of how I experienced it. I was sitting in the car on the driver's seat, closing my eyes a few times.
In the driver's seat?
No, in the passenger seat.
Thank you. I know we've got a car that mostly drives itself.
No, I was sitting in the passenger seat and yeah. then listening to it. And then my mouth, like my demeanor was mildly amused.
Yes.
That really describes it.
There is, in the first third of this, quarter to a third of this book,
yeah.
it is mildly amusing and the setup is mildly interesting yeah. and getting to know the setup and like getting the world building explained to you yeah. is mildly interesting.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. Because again, the point is, how can you construct a world where people playing a computer game in the real world makes sense?
Yes.
And the thing is, it never really makes sense. But again, I appreciate the attempt at doing this.
Right.
At that point, it just becomes somebody playing a computer game, but not playing a computer game, which I'll get into in a bit. And it's just terrible. Like, it just gets repetitive, boring. The writing gets worse as we go through. And
really?
You don't have the things that were interesting at the start, which is like, oh, how is this even working? You
yeah.
know, like, what is even going on here? Why is this all happening? Does it make any sense that there's like trillions of aliens who are just happy to destroy the Earth for entertainment or
yeah.
whatever? And it's, yeah, and all of that just falls away. And the writing, like I say, the writing is so bad that, like, you just don't know what's going on, except it's literally saying, oh, just imagine this is a computer game, a bit like that. Oh, just imagine this is a bit like this. You all know the scene where the person does the thing, just a bit like that.
Okay.
And the characters are flat. We meet characters, and then later, and the moment they die, we're like, oh, and he was really sad, but he didn't know them well enough. But, like, if he'd have got to know them, well, they would have been, like, a real hero because they did this, and they worked hard and stuff like that. But now they're dead. And I'm like, we spent zero time with this character, and now in the moment of their death we're being now told how important this person was and that they were a hero, and none of the other characters have any function in the plot. Like, it's just like the writing on the sentence level is really bad. He'll describe something by being like, oh, and this was this kind of monster, and you're like, and he just moves on. You're like, oh, so I have to already know what that kind of monster is
right.
for me to know what that kind of monster is. And then they're sort of like, oh yeah, and this troll was a variation of this kind of troll. It's like, nowhere in this book have you so far mentioned that trolls exist or what they are as well. And this kind of person was a this kind of thing, and you're like, I've just got to know that, like, that thing now, do I? That, like, bit of arcane knowledge from some previous version of Dungeons & Dragons or a computer game, an MMORPG, like some kind of, you know, whatever it's going to be. You know,
right.
Like
well, at the beginning, they were trolls.
What I'm saying is that all of these things are then described as, oh, and there was, like, a little box, and he picked up the little box, and on the little box was a small this. And it's sort of like, nothing isn't, it's just sort of, like, random adverbs just spat at you.
Okay.
And I'm just sort of like, oh, these are, like, when you read, well, you know, the first time that you ever, like, oh, how to write a novel, and it's sort of like, these are things to avoid. This book does all of the things that you're told to avoid in your first ever lesson of how to be a creative fiction writer.
Adjectives.
whatever adjectives, yes. You know, whatever it's going to be, but just the things,
describing,
you know,
words,
describing words, or the little thing, and you're like, little, it's a box. How, like,
how little?
Yeah, but also like just telling me the size of it, and sort of like, and there's lots of old people turn up, and sort of like, oh, this, he was another elderly person. It's like, yes, I know, because he's in an old person's home, and sort of like, and this person was elderly as well. It's like, yeah, you keep talking about these elderly people. You're mentioning now that every single one of them is elderly. It does, that's not a label that's helping me picture them as a human person and why we care for them.
Right. So they all have wrinkles and grey hair.
It just doesn't, they're all in wheelchairs. Whatever. Like it just doesn't, it doesn't work. So anyway, it's, and then as the action happens, literally there's so many times that someone will meet up with someone, because again, all of this is told from a very close perspective of one character, yeah, which is dungeon crawler Carl. Yeah. Carl, whatever his name is.
Yes.
Carl. Oh, it doesn't even have a second name. It's just like generic Carl.
Yeah.
And nothing, like everything that ever has to happen, or everything that we ever have to know, has to be told to Carl. So if anything happens like off screen or in a different scene or with other characters,
yeah,
the only way we can ever know that that happened is by these other characters just telling Carl about it.
So and it's so all hearsay.
There's whole massive chapters, like big sections at the end of this book, where important stuff is happening, not where Carl is.
Okay.
And then people are just telling Carl what's happening elsewhere.
Mm.
And it is...
Where the author could not make it so that Carl where the action is?
Two viewpoint characters. No, but it's Dungeon Crawler Carl. But no, he can't be where all the action is, because stuff is happening across the dungeon. And then, you know, when it came up and they're in like this level one and they're like, oh, you've got to get all the way down to sub-level 18.
Yeah.
And I was like, I paused it. I was like, this is not just one novel, is it? This is a series. And of course, now looking at the Wikipedia page, there's going to be 9 novels long.
Oh my God.
Up to 8 novels at the moment. And but in this book, even by the end of level 2...
It only goes until level 2.
The book ends with them, they're preparing to go to level 3. And then it ends and there's no end. It just sort of like, this is just the end of this bit of book. There's no ending to this book.
Boo.
There's nothing set up at the start of this book which is paid off at the end of this book. Right. Honestly, I was getting to the end of this book 20 minutes before I looked at my, you know, the audiobook, 20 minutes to go.
Yeah.
It's still explaining more rules of how the game works.
Oh,
now you're going to get a pet. And I'm like, oh, he's going to get a dinosaur, isn't he? And it's all like, oh yeah, we're going to get a velociraptor pet. And this is all happening as a setup to them going to level 3, down to level 3.
Yeah.
Which isn't happening in this book, but they're now explaining the rules of what they're going to need to know in the next level down.
Right.
And, yeah.
Oh, I really thought this was a full book.
It's not a novel.
I'm so glad I didn't.
No. Here's the thing. This is not a novel.
Yeah.
In no sense of the word, this is a novel.
Right.
Because it doesn't have a plot in the shape of a novel. It's got a setup, which is the first third of this book, quarter of this book is the setup.
Right.
And then the next part is just stuff happening, numbers going up, and whatever, you know.
Okay.
So just to say that this book started mildly amusing and mildly interesting.
Yeah.
And a third of the way through, it just got bad, but I was like, I've never read a lit RPG book before, so
yes,
I'm going to keep going to get the full experience of at least book number one.
Yeah.
Okay? And in total, I probably got about 1.5 to 2.0 stars worth of enjoyment out of this book.
Okay.
So, spoiler for the rest of this review, probably a 1.5 to 2 star book. But I did finish it, but I was
not
at the end listening at 2.5, and there was some stuff coming up which was so gross, and because it's all like this, you know, post-apocalypse slash dystopian kind of setup, that there's this stuff happening near the end, and I was like, I actually don't want to know what happens to these people, because it's obviously going to be bad. And probably racist and sexualist. And I was like, is there going to be an incest scene, like a forced incest rape scene now? And I just skipped forward. And by context, listening to what happens afterwards, probably not. But also, I didn't want to.
You didn't trust the author.
I didn't trust the author.
Yeah.
Not to put in an incest, forced incest rape scene between a character, like one side character who's just been introduced now to be tortured by a sadistic TV host, and his sister, or his, you know, the best friend of his sister or whatever like that. So I just skipped forward 10 minutes and just picked up the story again. I don't know what happened there. And I'm not saying he did insert that in, but there is a lot of quite broad, nasty sexual humor in this book.
Okay.
And I didn't want to get to this. Happens to me with anime and manga, and these almost every single time that I've started like a manga or anime or something like that, I'm like, all right, when does the underage, like, you know, sex with underage children begin, or the, you know, that's why every single anime and manga that you go into, you're like, is this going to be one of these things where, you know, people start having sex and we're going to sexualize schoolgirls, you know? And this book is one of the closest I've ever got to that feeling, that where I was sort of like, all right, we're having anal sex scenes, we're having sex tapes, we're having people getting sexual kicks out of people crushing animals with their feet, which, again, it's all like this, you know, yeah, rule 34, you know, hamster up the ass kind of shit, that you're just sort of like, this is so puerile. It's so utterly puerile. I didn't want, like, I couldn't give him the benefit of a doubt that a character was being introduced, and then his sister was also introduced, and they said, what would you do to save your sister? And I'm sort of like, and I immediately got icked out by it. Yeah. And I was like, I need to skip over the next 10 minutes of this book. So that's what I was feeling by the time I was getting near the end of this
book. We had at the start, when I listened, we had little bits of that, but I didn't think it, like, I'm glad I stopped when we did.
It's, again, the puerile sex comedy sex references, and it's more like references to stuff that's on the internet, which has got a bad reputation. It's right. Like, we're not actually gonna, you know, do this, but you shouldn't actually get off on the fact. It's not, you don't find it sexy that someone is gonna kill, like, tread on things, living things with your feet.
I remember we walked through Maribor and you explained this to me.
Yeah, because we had just finished some of the audiobook or something, and I was like, all right, yeah, let me explain what, I can't remember what the term was that they mentioned, but whatever it is, it's sort of like
crushing things under your feet.
Yeah, yeah, that women will get paid on, you know, OnlyFans or whatever.
Yeah.
And if someone will give them enough money, someone with a strong enough foot fetish, it's like they'll pay you to, like, step on puppies until they die, and they'll get a sexual kick out of it, which is horrific behavior.
And in this
book, that is played for laughs, that the AI that's controlling on the dungeon, the whole dungeon, has a foot fetish and takes a shine to Carl because he comes in with bare feet, and the first thing he does is kill some cockroach aliens with his feet, or whatever, something like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, all of that puerile stuff. And then at some point in the book, I was like, look, all of this comedy that you're doing is so pathetic, because you're just doing a satire by, like, combining, like, something from the real world, like, you know, Karens. It was talking about Karen, you know, like a Karen. Like, Karens are then made into this, and these other things are like pigs, and they're just doing it like that. And I was like, oh, man, these stereotypes are so boring. And then Carl comes to a realization. He's like, oh, what the aliens are doing, they're doing lazy stereotypes. So what they're doing is they're combining an Earth stereotype with a Dungeons and Dragons stereotype and just mashing them together. And it's really stupid and lazy, but I can see what the aliens are doing. And I'm like, no, that's you. You're the author. You can't just hang a lampshade on the fact that you are doing reductive stereotypes mixed with this. It's like the easiest form of comedy and satire. It's sort of like, oh, what if German politicians but Lord of the Ring orcs, and, you know, and you're just straight into it, and you're like, what if the Greens were part of the Warhammer universe, or, you know, whatever it's going to be. And you're just sort of like, popular culture A, satirical target B, smash them together, comedy. And you're like, well done, very good.
Yeah.
And Carl, the protagonist, realizes what the it's like hanging a lampshade on, like, what's his name, Matt Dinnerman, going, I'm doing lazy stereotypes for comedy here, but I'm going to have my main character reference the fact, like, mention the fact that the aliens are doing, you know, broad stereotypes of comedy.
So it's not Matt Dinnerman opening up the fourth wall writing it. Like,
he might as well be saying to his readers, look, I know I'm just doing broad, dumb stereotypes for easy satire, but one of the characters in the book is going to notice me do that, and so I can get away with just carrying on doing it.
Yeah.
All of this brings me on to 4 points that I want to make to wrap this up. First of all, I recently watched the movie Running Man. Not the Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger, but the more recent Running Man with, you know, straight nose chisel jaw guy. What's his name? Don't even remember his name.
I don't know.
He's a fun guy. He was turned up in the recent Top Gun movie, and I was like, who's that guy? He's really good. Can't remember his name. Anyway, I quite liked him as an actor.
Yeah.
And there was this movie, and I was on a plane, and I was, transatlantic flight.
Oh, yeah.
Put the movie on, watch The Running Man. And it is a perfectly whatever, you know, most dangerous game Running Man style.
It's a good plane movie.
Yes. And also there's a plane in it. But it's like one of those things which is like part a new adaptation of the original Stephen King, Richard Bachman book.
Yeah.
And partly a remake of the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, but it's closer to the book, but it's got loads of previous Arnold Schwarzenegger version of the movie references in it.
Okay.
But then also it has another twist at the end of it, which if you read the book, you think it's going to go one way, but it's like, aha, not quite like it's... Anyway,
But you also read the book.
I've read the book. Yes. I reviewed it on the SFBRP.
We did.
Either way. But here's the thing. Because it's based so much in the past it's an adaptation of a book written in like the 70s or 80s or whenever the book came out, and then also based on a movie from the 80s.
Yeah.
Everything is based in a world where the way to be the most famous person is to be on TV, and the way that the government controls how people think is via television propaganda.
Yes.
And it really misses a trick in that television is not the most important thing at the moment.
No.
Not for many, many years has television been the most important thing.
True.
And I was like, but this Running Man movie would have been so much better if instead of like these cameras flying around doing it, it's all via social media. Like just come up with like a fake Instagram, fake Twitter, fake
Facebook,
whatever. Yeah, live stream
things.
Yeah, and have people live streaming.
And
have
drones.
People with drones.
Easy.
But make it a commentary on like a satire on social media in the same way that these movies from the 80s were all satires about, you know, the how bad television is. You know, you see it in the in RoboCop, you see it in the Starship Troopers, you know. It's all based around like, oh yeah, and the worst person in the world is this TV host, and they're the one who's actually secretly behind things and controlling things, you know.
Yeah.
And it's everything in the 1970s, 80s and 90s is very television based.
Yes.
But now obviously it should all be, you know, social media based.
Yeah.
Like instead of him sending like recording video diaries onto VHS tapes and sending them off to be broadcast on television, he should just be making social media posts himself, you know. That's how it should have been. And this book is I have exactly the same issue. It's sort of like it, like the subtitle here, "The Apocalypse Will Be Televised." I'm like, why am I reading in 2026? Why am I reading a book which is all about television and that they go on chat shows and that they're featured on television shows and that there's a television each day? There is one television show which is like the highlights of literally millions of people around the, like, stuck underground. 2 million people stuck underground. And that's edited down into an hour and a half television show.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make sense. You can't scale millions of people's lives down into an hour and a half. Like, the only way that we get the highlights is by an algorithm sorting out, you know, like YouTube, more minutes of video are uploaded to YouTube every minute than there are minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then there's an algorithm which decides what I should see, you know. Yeah. And there's no algorithm in here. There's an AI, but all of the decisions about what's being shown on the main TV shows is like producers and directors and editors, like human level ones. It makes no sense. And also you can't, like, what are we even doing? Like, why am I reading another book, which is another satire about TV shows showing ultra violence and people being happy about it?
That's like what's the Stephanie? What's her name? The
Battle Royale.
Yeah, the books with Katniss and
Not Battle Royale. That the movie Battle Royale. No, but that's not even a TV thing. Yeah, the Hunger Games.
Hunger Games. They had like a TV.
Yes,
like,
but it's possible to have a TV show because there's only like 20, 30 kids or whatever.
Yes.
And there's one host, and it's for one reason. It happens once a year. It's not like just an ongoing, literally millions of people's lives and adventures are being edited down into a 1 hour TV program. Again, it doesn't make any sense, but also not just on a practical sense and a world building sense, but also why am I still reading satire on television programming. Hmm. It doesn't make any sense. Oh. Anyway, let's move on to the actual, the main part of it, which is the lit RPG part of this. I didn't know what kind of book that I was getting.
Yes.
Lit RPG. Hmm. So the first thing that I was hoping that I would get out of a novel like this is that it would feel like I was playing a game, or it would give me the same feelings that I get when I play a game.
Yeah.
But no, because when I'm playing a game, and I play a lot of computer games. In fact, I don't. I play one computer game, yeah. Which is PUBG.
Yes.
PUBG.
And before that, during the pandemic, we played Zelda.
But in,
together.
In Zelda as well.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. When you're thinking about us playing Zelda,
yeah.
Except for the fact that it took me a long time to work out that I could use the motion controls to aim arrows.
Yes.
And you had some troubles with some of the controls.
I didn't grow up with controllers, yes. So my brain is not wired for them.
Yeah, but I didn't grow up with motion control controllers, so that's what yeah. messed me up. I was like, what button? I can't control the joystick properly. Mm. And it was like, oh, you had to point the controller. Either way, all of that to say, put aside any issues that we had just with the controller, all of the memories that I have of playing that game are not menus. Some of it might be looking at a map. But generally, I remember the actual fights. I remember the
landscape.
The landscape.
The music.
The music. The characters. The cooking.
Yes.
The exploring.
Yeah.
The, like, getting
better. Us working together.
Yeah, us working together. You're like, and when we've played other computer games, when we played, like, the Subnautica as well.
Yeah.
Like that. I was doing the controls, and you were, like, looking at the maps and keeping track of stuff.
Yes.
And when I remember playing that, I remember the feeling of going through those environments and
yeah.
being scared by the monsters
yeah.
and the emotions of succeeding
yes.
and all of that kind of stuff. And when I'm playing PUBG, like last night, I played a game and there was a good team that we got together
yeah.
and we won in the end. I had 6 kills. Now, there was a few things where I'm looking at my health bar and, you know, you're looking at some bits on the screen.
Yeah.
But my memory... And the vibe of, like, what I'm experiencing, I'm fully immersed in a very, very hectic, very, very stressful shooting environment. Like, I'm shooting people with guns and they're shooting at me. Mm. And we're defending a house and people are driving up in cars and we're shooting. Like, what I'm experiencing is the actual, like, the narrative of what it feels like to be in a game.
Yeah.
Like, and part of that is, you know, killing the monsters in Zelda. But... that is like what the main experience, that immersion in this in. And I don't notice the menus and I don't notice the stats. And when I'm communicating with teammates, when I'm playing PUBG or when we're doing something in, you know, playing Zelda, sitting next to each other on account, getting, you know, repetitive strain injury in our fingers. like we can talk about those kind of things. But when you're immersed in the game, those things fall, they just become automatic and fall aside. And the rest of what the game that you're playing is just the game.
Yeah.
And
solving puzzles.
And while I'm not thinking when I'm playing this, I am moving my character in the game forward.
Yeah.
And they are and I am making my character walk through the door and I'm making my character crouch down and pull out the Zelda sword or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I am doing this. Even
yes.
though there's like this little third person, you know, Zelda character, not Zelda,
yeah.
you know, Link character.
Yeah.
It's I'm having the adventure and yeah. I'm doing that. And this book is all about opening loot boxes, looking through menus, leveling up, keeping track of levels. Like, now that I remember Zelda, I don't remember a single level that I was on and how many hearts or what endurance stuff. I remember that I had to improve how many hearts I had.
Yeah.
But in any moment of the game, I'm not thinking back, oh, yeah, that was the time when I was a level 11, you know, heart or whatever.
No.
It just wasn't, there isn't that. There's that one island that you go to and they take away all your hearts and take away all your gear, you know, and you go back to nothing. And that's a really fun little bit.
Yeah.
But that's not. And this book is all about leveling, like opening menus, talking about the user interface that they're doing, you know, writing, you know, in-game chat messages to each other, looking at maps, looking at the dots on the maps. This is a red dot, which means it's an enemy. This is a white dot, which means it's an NPC or whatever like that. And honestly, this book spends 1,000% of the word count talking about the in-game menus in this that dungeon crawler Carl is looking at
yeah.
compared to describing, I don't know, any physical location that they're going into more than through a door into another chamber.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, anything? Anything about the chamber?
Yeah.
Anything about the room? Like entire characters turn up, like major characters turn up in this book. And they are described less than how the map works and what color the dots are on the map works.
Yes.
We get so much stuff.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't be too bad, but every moment that stuff is mentioned, I lose interest and it just, I don't have any immersion.
Yeah.
And immersion is what I'm wanting from this.
Yes. I remember when we listened to the parts together, there were these bits introduced about the loot boxes. And already at the beginning, I got the bit.
Yeah.
But it continued.
You were there. Yeah, yeah. And guess what? All the way through the book, there's like at the end of every action scene, they're like, and then I open this loot box and I didn't get anything. Oh, except for this thing, this thing, this thing, this thing, this thing. And none of those things are used in this book. They're not Chekhov's loot boxes. It's just stuff that comes up that we just, I'm like, oh, I'm keeping track of this. And then there's other characters introduced. I'm keeping track of that. And none of it's paid off. And it's just anti-immersive. All right. Point number two. Mm. Oh, sorry. Point number three, if not point number two, I was hoping to be immersed. I wasn't immersed. At least I was hoping that it would feel like maybe a novelized version of somebody else playing the game.
Yeah.
And in this case, I'm talking about like the Adventure Zone and the, you know, these live play podcasts, you know, like we did with playing Dungeons and Dragons on a podcast.
Yes.
You get the experience of somebody else playing a game because... they are not their characters. There's always like two levels of storytelling going on.
Yeah.
There's the characters that those people are playing in the game.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the real life people who are funnier than you are and cleverer than you are and better at making podcasts or, you know, video, you know, real play, whatever like that.
It's like the corridor crew doing the son of a...
Which we've not actually seen them, but you know.
But that's kind of how I imagine it.
Son of a dungeon, So you see them playing the game and then you see the results of that with sound effects or them acting it out or, you know, role playing. They actually do the role playing of the role playing game.
Yeah.
And so what you're actually doing is you get the experience of what it's like to play Dungeons and Dragons or another game or whatever.
Yeah.
In seeing those people playing the game.
Yeah.
And those people are more than one person.
Yeah.
Or it's one person actually playing the game against other people or whatever.
Yes.
And so you get the conversation like, oh, we're in this situation. Hey, what are we going to do in this situation? Do you think we should? Yeah, okay. We could just go in guns blazing or with the swords out, but let's not. Let's try and be clever.
Yes.
And, you know, let's go in and we're going to do something with rope. No, don't do something with rope because you can never roll dice high enough to succeed with the rope. Let's go in and we're going to find our way in here.
So you get the conversation about the role playing, about how we are approaching the game. Yeah.
You get all of that. And then the good versions of these will then edit out all of the boring dice roll stuff and looking through menus and looking through rules and going, oh yeah, what does happen if this troll gets hit by flames and then gets hit by an ice? Does the ice knock out the flames so they don't take the damage from the flames? Or does it double up and you get the flame damage and the ice damage? Mm. Or is there some kind of other thing that we don't know? So someone looks up and looks through troll, looks through this and goes, and all of that's edited out. Mm. All the stuff that breaks the immersion, they just roll the dice and they're like, you succeeded. And you're like, great. And we can move on with it. Yeah. So we get the game, we get the benefit of the game game mechanics.
Yeah.
But we don't have to, it doesn't have to break our immersion. It just furthers the story.
So we get the creative output of the players that, you know, come up with ideas how to solve a puzzle.
Yeah, this also works with game like Twitch streamers and game streamers. Yeah. Like I don't watch a lot of live Twitch streaming.
There are loads of them,
but
I watch
quite a few people who play computer games.
Yes.
Like I watch PUBG, we watch like Trackmania, you know, other just random stuff that comes along.
Yes.
We watch people play GeoGuessr, watch people play, you know, lots of different games.
Yes.
So, and it's fun to follow along with those people because the game is happening. The action's actually happening.
Yes.
But then there's somebody in a little box or they're on against a green screen or blue screen and you're watching them reacting to the game.
And making decisions. Yeah.
And even if they're playing by themselves, they'll explain what's going on. They'll explain the mechanics and you get to know the game through their eyes.
Yeah.
Like, before the first time I ever played Trackmania, I'd watched literally hundreds of hours of other people playing Trackmania. Yeah. Before I'd watched PUBG, I'd watched maybe 100 hours of people playing PUBG before I ever played it, because I wasn't sure if I could get it working on my computer, but I did, and I was like, great, like, this is a game for me. Like, if I was to take up chess, I'd probably have seen many hours of people playing chess, you know? Yeah. Same with all of these different kind of things. You get to know the game through the eyes of somebody who's playing the game, who can talk about the game, but isn't, they're not a character in the game.
Yes.
They're playing the game. And this book doesn't have any of that. We don't get to see someone playing the game who isn't in the game, whose character isn't in the game. There's this like fuzzy boundary of like, Carl will be like, well, I've got a plan. And then they do the thing where the book then doesn't say, well, I'm not going to have Carl now explain the plan. We're just going to go straight into the action and we can see the outcome of his plan. Which is then described to us. But we don't get to see two people who are actually playing a game decide what to do. And you can't, because this is not a real game. Like, I understand enough about Dungeons & Dragons that when I hear someone playing a Dungeons & Dragons in a podcast, you can just be like, oh, well, we already know that if you roll 20, roll a natural 20, you're going to get a crit. And if you roll double, like, you know enough about how the game works and about the lore that you know that when people are describing something or coming up with something, you can logically work out what the possibilities are. And then you can triumph when it works because you know how unlikely it's going to be. Or you can be really sad when it doesn't because you know how unlucky they were that it didn't work.
Yes.
Because it's actually a real game in the real world that we know how it works, either by us playing it by ourselves or by us watching enough Twitch streamers playing it or listening to enough D&D podcasts about it. Like, we know how it works. And this book doesn't have any, like, the game isn't a real game.
Yeah.
And so there is no way for there to be any tension outside of the author saying, oh, this was really tense.
Yes.
But it isn't really tense because I know there's like another 7 books afterwards and like the main character's probably going to live all the way through it.
Yeah.
But also there's no tension because it isn't actually somebody playing a real game like you get in Dungeons & Dragons podcasts where you can listen and maybe somebody just dies and you're like, oh, like, well, we're going to, like, this is an interesting turn for the story.
Yeah.
We didn't expect this. And it's actual drama comes up.
Yeah, so I remember us playing the podcast and I get really upset or sad when, like, I don't know, the teddy bear, you know. But you know what? I was just thinking this book would make so much more sense if instead of spending our time through the eyes of Carl, if we would have actually spent the time with the aliens playing the game.
Well, no, here's the thing. If literally, we just both finished reading The Player of Games by Ian M. Banks.
Yes.
And in that, how the rules of the game works are never really explained. We're told that there's lots of pieces. We're told that there's like three boards, and it's, but the writing is, again, it's really difficult to always like compare people to Ian M. Banks, who's just better at this than literally anyone. But it's really difficult for us to, like we don't need to know what the rules are. We don't need to know that he's opening menus. We don't need to know all that. Just the writing is good enough that we know what it feels like to play a game at that level.
Yeah.
Because Ian M. Banks is good enough as an author to communicate that with us.
Yes.
And this book is like falling in between. So if not point two, if I didn't feel like I was playing a game in this book, and also it didn't feel like I was watching somebody play a game. Or listen to somebody playing a game or have an edited highlights of somebody playing a game.
Yeah.
I was hoping that it would just be like a piece of fiction which feels like it's from a computer game and have all the computery game or, you know, Dungeons and Dragons-y stuff there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't actually somebody playing a game. It just felt like it was there. You know, like Adventure Time.
Yes.
With the cartoon, with Finn and the dog or whatever.
Yes.
When you're doing that, you're like, ah, this is like a video game world. This is a fun world, and it feels like a D&D adventure in some
ways.
But
it is cartoon,
it isn't that. You're just watching the outcome of an adventure, and the same with the, like, say the Horus Heresy. These Warhammer books, which I read the first one of this, you know, Horus Rising or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's really good, and I wasn't. And that first book, I was like, I was expecting it to read like somebody was just playing, rolling some dice and doing, you know, and playing But it wasn't. It was sort of like, ah, what would the political machinations be
right.
to get to a world where massive world-spanning conquest was a thing?
Yes.
Like thousands and thousands of years of war between different factions.
So it leaves out the playing...
No, there's battle scenes and there is large-scale war.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is the mechanical...
Yes, the mechanics
the
are left
mechanics
out.
Are left
Same
out.
With we watched that... Did you also watch it, the Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves with...
Yes, we watched that movie.
With Chris Pine.
Yes.
Hey, it's Chris Pine's birthday today. Did you know
Is
that?
Is it?
Yeah.
Ooh.
There's two Hollywood actors who I know exactly the day they were born.
Macaulay Culkin.
Macaulay Culkin and Chris Pine were born on the same day, which is August 26th.
As you.
August 26th, 1980. Who else was born that? It's my birthday today, everyone.
Happy
August 26th.
Birthday.
And so I am exactly the same age as both Chris Pine and Macaulay Culkin. Anyway, so that movie, Dungeons and Dragons,
yes.
we weren't watching people playing Dungeons and Dragons,
no.
but we knew the kind of rules of the world because it's sort of like, hey, just so you know, these people are all your friends playing Dungeons and Dragons, but we're not going to see them. We're just going to see the story outcome
yes.
of this group of people getting
together.
The
craziness that can unfold.
Yeah, the craziness that can unfold in a wacky Dungeons and Dragons world.
Yeah.
But just imagine, don't worry. We're
or
not
like,
going to see the people playing, but this is like the story outcome of people playing.
Or like the Lego movie stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
The Lego movie is a good
comp. It is revealed... it is revealed and we know it's just kids playing.
Yeah, and
but
in the
we
second,
get to see...
In the second movie, it's even funnier because it's sort of like the daughter's playing one game and the son's playing yeah. another game and you're like, no, dinosaurs, and the other one's, no, fairies
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah,
rainbows.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it can be done.
So it can be done that you can read something that you feel, oh, this is just all the outcome of a game. But of course, that isn't what this is. The whole point of Lit RPG is that it's fiction which has all the trappings of, like, you know, character progression and numbers going up and people getting stronger and more capable and getting more rewards.
Mm.
But it's so brain dead clumsy about it
yeah.
that it didn't get the immersion. It didn't feel like I was watching somebody play a computer game, and it didn't have the cleverness of it being, oh, this is just the outcome of a game session, but that's what it... So it just fell... Like, there's all these different cracks that it could fell through.
Yeah.
And then what it did is it dug massive holes where the cracks were and then jumped in and then failed to get out again. You know? And I literally heard somebody mention this on a podcast a few weeks ago. Like after I'd already listened to the first half.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was the podcast Critical Friends. And that is talking about, you know, it's a podcast about book criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody brought up, you know, like reading through awards lists or what these books were awards lists.
Yeah.
And was it that podcast? Either way, I can't remember if it was that podcast. And somebody mentioned, they were like, this book wasn't like reading a novel. It was like reading somebody playing a computer game, but the computer game wasn't even very good. And I was like, no. It's not even that good. It's not even as good as reading about somebody playing a computer game, because all of the things that I feel when I watch somebody play a computer game or I experience somebody playing
yeah.
D&D in a let's play or live play or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
I didn't get any of those feelings.
No.
And also, it would be impossible for me... I'm getting happy birthday messages here as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, constantly you're looking at your watch.
Yeah, yeah. I should have turned off notifications. But I'm not getting any of the vibes or the feels that I get from playing a computer game, watching somebody else play a computer game, playing a D&D game myself, watching somebody else play, or listening to somebody else play a computer game, or... what I would like from a media experience which is like computer gamey based or you
yeah.
know tabletop gamey based or
yeah,
RPG
like an
based.
Outcome
yeah
you know
so
but I expected after I started listening to this with you
yeah
I expected certain things to just disappear more into the background.
They never it
like,
never goes
at
into the background.
Beginning you can you know you can introduce how things work and then
just tell the story.
Yes.
No.
I thought that's what would be happening.
It never goes into the background.
Oh,
leveling
no.
up, this book ends by saying, hey, you're going to get to level 3 or down to level sub level 3.
Yeah.
You're going to have to choose your alignment, your class and your race and your whatever it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, you could become a necromancer, fire weaver, troll or whatever it's going to
mm-hmm.
be. That's the discussion that they're set. That's what they're setting up for the beginning of the next novel after this novel.
Right.
And I'm like, you could not pay me enough money in the world to continue on with this series where I'm reading somebody describing what it would be like for somebody to be playing a computer game, but not a computer game, but we don't know how it works. It's just we're going to scrape the barrel of Dungeons and Dragons references. And
that's so weird.
And it's not Dungeons and Dragons. Then I look at the Wikipedia page, and it says development, audiobooks. It's, you know, this is like 14 million audiobooks sold here. I'm part of the problem. And then it goes sales, legacy, adaptations. It says webcomic, graphic novel, games. Renegade Game Studio announced that they had partnered with Dinnerman to develop a tabletop role-playing game set in the Dungeon Crawler Carl universe. And I'm like, stop it. He's ripped off like all of these other games in the fictional as well. How can you then be like, oh, let's now make a computer game, like a tabletop game version of a... I'm like, this is crazy. It's like watching the Tomb Raider movie, and I'm like, why is this shit? And you're like, oh, people only play Tomb Raider because they wanted to feel like Indiana Jones. Yep. And then they make a movie about Tomb Raider, and you're like, oh, I'm making a movie which is based on what it feels like to play a game, based on what it would feel like to be Indiana Jones. And I'm like, this is too many steps. Yeah. You can't go that far down. Yeah. It's like watching the latest, like the new Lion King adaptation. I'm like, what is this? It's sort of like, oh yeah, it's a live action-ish, you know, CGI version of a story which was developed for as a cartoon, but then made into a stage musical play with extra stuff going in, with extra songs going in,
yeah,
that are going to include some of those in. But then they're going to have somebody else write some more music for it, and Beyonce is going to turn up and sing it.
Mm.
But it's going to be a remake of a movie which in the end was sort of like a ripoff of a Japanese story, which in the end was just like Hamlet
and then
or whatever.
We're putting it back on stage.
Yeah, and then you put the other one back on stage, and then you make it like a second movie of this. And I'm like, that's too... You're too far away from the original... Like, what was the original thing that we're doing here?
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with the new Running Man movie, which, again, is a much better movie than Dungeon Crawler Carl is a novel.
Yeah.
But even then, they're like, all right, so this is a remake of an adaptation of another... And you're like, no. Stop. This can be done. You know, like, the latest Dune movies are kind of like a remake of the movie, like the previous movie, but it's not really because it is actually an adaptation of a novel.
Yes.
But it's sort of like it's like referencing this other, and you're like, just stop it. Like, this is, you're doing too many things at once.
Too many
like, this book is so far away from what it feels like to play a game, that honestly, I think this, how can anybody read this and feel like they're getting a satisfying gaming experience or novel reading experience or narrative experience? Mm. And then I looked at some Goodreads and people are like, oh, this shouldn't work, but it does. I was like, I wish my standards were as low as yours. Sorry, people who gave it 5 stars,
oh,
but it is really bad. But I'm going to give it a few stars. I'm going to give it 1.5 stars.
Yeah.
Because, again, I was, for the first third, mildly amused and mildly interested. But then I realized, oh, it's just puerile humor. It's just dumb shit. It's not thought out. The world building doesn't make sense. The characters are unsatisfying. The storytelling is all over the place. The writing is terrible, and the descriptions of what's going on and where they are is overwhelmed by computer game graphics and numbers going up and menu systems and mapping systems and then, in-game chat.
And then in the audiobook, you're literally being shouted at because it says, oh, this voice shouted at me. And then guess what the voice does?
It shouts
at you.
But people are really into that. I mean, I think the audiobook production is pretty good. Like, it is a good, like, if you want it. And I think the AI voice, sarcastic AI voice, I think is funny.
Yes.
And it's performed in a funny way.
Yes.
But it gets old quick.
But I'm guessing if I would be reading this as a, like, me reading...
No. But this is, again, looking at the Wikipedia page, it's mostly an audiobook thing.
Ah, okay. So there isn't... But there is a paperback version or like an
ebook. Yeah, sales. It says here, in 2025, the bookstore chain Books A Million named the first entry in the series as its inaugural book of year. In July 2026, which is literally last month, the first 8 books had sold more than 14 million copies. while the audible versions of the audiobooks had been listened to for more than 140 million hours. The first book had sold more than 2.7 million by May of 2026 and been on the New York Times bestseller list for 19 straight weeks. This novel is like big on Audible. Like the production of the audiobook is one of the things that people really get sucked into. Yeah.
But anyway, if I would be reading this book, I already know I would be skimming like things.
I was skimming. I put this book on 1.5 style. And when stuff started, I was skipping over big chunks. Yeah. And not just because I found it objectionable. I'm like, well, this is just boring now. Yeah. Like that. So let me skip forward until it feels like something interesting has happened. So I just drag it forward, middle of the chapter. If anything happened, no, grab it. And you always have to listen to the last 2 minutes of the chapter because that's when they're setting up the cliffhanger. Actually, the important stuff all happens in the last 2 minutes of the chapter.
Yeah.
So that's it. We've been talking about this book for an hour. Do you have any other questions about it?
Not really. Like
4.44 stars. This is the highest rated book that I've read from last year, I think.
Okay.
Or one of them. Let's go over. Let's bring up the other notes, the other books that I read from last year. So this, you know, I've been talking about reading books from last year.
Yeah.
So I have done Shroud by Adrian Tchaikovsky, Slow Gods by Claire North.
Yep.
Halcyon Years by Alistair Reynolds, The Everlasting by Alex Harrow, Rakes Fall by Vajra Chandrasekhara, Luminous by Sylvia Park, I started and didn't finish Incandescent by Emily Tesh, I started and didn't finish Anibot, then I did read There Is No Anti-Mimetics Division and Dungeon Crawler Cull, even though they both started off as pandemic novels, were self-published years ago, but are now classed as, you know, properly out to be eligible for publishers. So the last few books that I have that I'd like to check out as Notes from a Regicide by Isaac Fellman, which I don't know much about, but apparently it's like an epistolary novel, so it's like letters written backwards and forwards. So I might read that as an ebook rather than as an audiobook.
Yeah.
A Granite Silence by Nina Allen, which is kind of a mix of nonfiction, contemporary fiction, and a bit of science fiction fantasy mixed in together.
Interesting.
So, and The Expansion Project by Ben Pester, but I think that might be a self-published book, or it's a minor book and I haven't managed to find an easy copy on as an audiobook or as a library book or something. So I'll see how those go. So yeah, only three more books to read for me to be fully caught up in my 2025 new book reading project.
It's interesting, but it shows again that just because a book is being nominated for an award doesn't really mean anything.
A lot of these books are awardy kind of books.
No, I'm more talking about the Arthur C. Clarke Award nominees.
But Anibot won it last year. Anibot won it last year.
Okay.
And I didn't get out of the first chapter of
Anibot.
So
that's what I'm saying. There is no personal enjoyment judgment possible.
But honestly, I'm embarrassed for the Arthur C. Clarke Award nominating panel or whoever did it that added this book to a shortlist of the six best books from last year. And I'm sorry, and I'm also embarrassed for the jury. There's like three jury members who read all of these six books and decided which was the best. I'm embarrassed that they had to read this book and compare them with Luminous by Sylvia Plath. And
There Were Wolves Again.
And When There Were Wolves Again. That wasn't on this list. Either way, no, because I'd already read it before I started. Yeah, like I'm embarrassed that this book is put alongside those two other books.
Yeah.
Like I understood if it would be on a list with There Is No Anti-Mimetics Division, because again, another self-published book, self-published COVID lockdown novel, which has then been republished
I do have a question.
What is the question that you do have?
So the Arthur C. Clarke Award is not the same as the British science fiction.
No, that's a different one, I think.
Okay, because the Matt Dunderman.
Yeah.
Where's he from?
No, it's those are always for books that have been published in the UK in the previous year.
Okay, so it's not about British authors.
It's not for British. It's not about British authors, although British authors are more likely to win the Arthur C. Clarke Award than they are to win, say, the Nebula or Hugo Award, because those are American awards voted on by Americans. Okay. Pretty much Americans.
Right.
You know.
But Matt Dunderman is American.
Yes. Guess where he's from? Where was the book set? The book was set in...
San Diego?
No, it was Seattle. But anyway,
Seattle.
Washington.
Yeah,
Washington State. And so, of course, he writes what he knows. He's gonna start the book?
In Washington, where it's cold.
Matt Dinnerman. I can click on his Wikipedia page. Yeah, he was something, something, something.
How old is he?
He was born, it says, about 1970s. His name isn't listed there.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So he lived in Yakima, Washington. So, of course, you write the books about where you're from.
Yeah.
Whatever like that.
Okay.
Again. No, nothing wrong about that. I've got no problems with that. Peter Hamilton only writes books set on Earth in like
Newcastle.
There was one in Newcastle. There was one in was other places that he's lived. The lake. What's it called? Doesn't matter. Smallest county. Doesn't matter. Either way. But it's funny how this one location turns up in like four of his books. And you're like, all right, we get it.
Yeah. But I prefer that because then people know actually what they're writing about.
Yeah, this is no problem at all.
Okay.
Anything else?
So, yeah. Rating 1.5 stars.
Yeah, 1.5 stars. Again, it could have been good, but it just failed at everything it was trying to do.
Yeah.
Except it didn't fail at the puerile humor thing. But I thought that would be sprinkled throughout the book rather than major plot points in the book.
But as I said at the beginning, I really didn't like that. Didn't like even the humor.
Didn't click with you.
Didn't click with you. I thought this Carl was a very, very difficult for me to endure character.
Yeah. But and also like bringing it back to the like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Mm. This is definitely a book which is very badly edited and just contains lots of stuff that the author thought was a good idea at the time.
Yeah.
Because it's so incoherent that every single thing that happens is just a delivery for a dumb joke, a puerile joke, sort of like stuff happening. It's just a book full of stuff happening.
Yeah.
In the way that a good computer game or good Dungeons and Dragons session isn't just stuff happening. Everything is paid off. Like a good, you know, game master, dungeon master will bring in, you mentioned that. Okay, well, I'll keep a note of that.
Yeah,
and then later on you can be like, what do you have there? Do you really have that thing?
Yes.
You know, and that's, I could make you, when we were doing it with me doing it with you, I would set stuff up and you'd be like, I'm really clever thinking of that. And I'm like, I set that up. Like, you're falling off a building and you're going to jump inside this bag, you know, to survive, to get down to the bottom. Like, I'd set that up for you. Like, I'd put that situation. But you felt accomplished coming up with the solution to the puzzle that you set
you. Yeah, but the reader is doing heavy lifting. Otherwise there's nothing here.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. Let's wrap it up there. Thank you, Matt Dinnerman, for exposing me to Lit RPG. I don't think I'm going to go for this again. Unless somebody says, oh, no, this is really done right. But,
yes.
You know, oh, my goodness.
Sounds difficult.
It sounds difficult. Mm-hmm. 1.5 stars. I think that's it. Happy birthday to me.
Yes.
Any happy birthday messages? You can email me, luke@juggler.net. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm @LukeBurridge. Juliana is also in these places. Oh, well, is on Instagram @JUKUBerlin. I'm on Blue Sky, which is fun enough. I'm on Mastodon. Find the links in the show notes.
Yes.
And also become my friends on Goodreads so I can judge you for enjoying this book. Here we go. Hutch, 5 stars. Ulysses, 5 stars. it drops off pretty quick, by the way.
Okay.
Two people rate it 5 stars and then it just drops
and
off
then,
from then. So
and then
Pedro,
people have
Joel, Diva Diane, Alabuka, Musen gelesen würden.
That has 5 stars.
So there are a few more 5 stars. But a few other people get rated it like 3 stars. There's quite a lot of 3 stars in here as well.
Oh, there's a 1 star.
Ellison, you're talking my language. Not quite sure why this book is so popular. Maybe it picks up after the first half, but I didn't make it quite that far. The concept is clever, but 100 pages in, everything became tedious. Yes. And it was good that I had a bit of audiobook listening time to get through.
Good job. I stopped where I stopped.
Seth says, the author seems to have a very low opinion of his audience, and I'm not sure he's wrong. Brutal.
Good.
Tamahomi says, pretty fun. Nice change of pace from the normal fantasy or sci-fi. I opted for the audiobook, and the narrator was pretty good at different voices, including a talking cat. Somehow my attention span isn't as good with audio. I should probably work on that. Some of the characters are pretty crazy. So 3 stars for that. Yeah, so lots of 3-star ratings from SFBRP listeners.
Mm.
And like maybe 3 people gated it 5 stars, which is 3 people too many. Right. That's it.
All right.
Thanks a lot for listening. What, are you going to say something else?
We'll catch you next time.
Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.